You are Locked On Balls, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Balls. It is your team every single day. I'm your host, Eric Kane, at underscore Kaner on Twitter, and at Locked On Balls. You can find this podcast each and every day, weekday, on every single platform, completely free. And thank you so much for making Locked On Balls your first listen. Today's episode is brought to you by NetSuite. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. Head to netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA for special end-of-the-year financing on all the number one financial system for powering your growth. So big thanks to NetSuite for sponsoring today's show. You can find this podcast at underscore Kaner and at Locked On Vols on Twitter. I do radio in Knoxville, Tennessee at the flagship station for the University of Tennessee. That is 99.1 The Sports Animal, as well as I write for the rival site covering Tennessee football and recruiting. That is VolQuest.com. Got a fun show coming up here today. In segment number one, should Heupel have been given more consideration for SEC Coach of the Year? Of course, Kirby Smart won that award, but we'll talk about why Heupel should have gotten a little bit more consideration in segment one. In segment two, is the early signing period a bad thing? Of course, we've got the early signing period that gets going next Wednesday, and some interesting comments from Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby. We'll talk about all that in segment two. And then Ryan Shumpert of Rocky Top Insider will stop by to talk a little Tennessee hoops in segment number three. That is a Friday rundown, so let's go ahead and get on into it. So when you look at the SEC standings, how each team finished in the regular season. Of course, Georgia led the way 12-0, 12-1 now because of the loss to Alabama in the SEC Championship. Winners of the East, Alabama, 12-1, picked up an additional win again over Georgia in the SEC Championship, but a 11-1 regular season, that lone loss coming to Texas A&M. But on the East, it goes Georgia, 12-1, 8-0 conference record. It goes Kentucky at the second spot, 9-3 overall, 5-3 in conference play. Tennessee finishes third, 7-5 overall record, an even 4-4 conference record inside the SEC. Then you get Missouri and South Carolina, each finishing at 6-6 and 3-5 in conference. Florida finishing at 6-6, 2-6 in conference. And then there's Vanderbilt and the Sailor, 2-10, 0-8 in conference. Look over at the West. Of course, Alabama, Ole Miss was second at 10-2, the first 10-win regular season in Ole Miss history, 6-2 in conference play. Arkansas, 8-4, 4-4 in conference play. Mississippi State, 7-5, 4-4 in conference play. A&M, 8-4, 4-4 in conference play. Auburn, 6-6, 3-5 in conference play. And the same for LSU at a 6-6, 3-5 overall record and conference record. So, of course, Kirby Smart was named SEC Coach of the Year. Full disclosure, if I had a vote, Kirby Smart would have been my vote. I understand that that's unpopular. I understand that the arguments against who my vote would be, well, you know, he has the best toys. Of course you're supposed to win. You know, Georgia's the best team. Of course, it was expected that Georgia was going to win. I hear all that. But the way I look at it is Georgia in the regular season, historically, what that defense was, I mean, it was incredible. You were allowing just a little more than a touchdown, but not quite the extra point. That's my favorite phrase of the year. I've used it a ton of times when talking about that Georgia defense. The emergence of tight end, you know, Bowsley, the tight end or whatever his name is, just incredible. The way you were able to be so efficient offensively, though not really having some of the superstars like Alabama has on offense. But defensively, you know, starting with Jordan Davis in the front, your linebackers, Dean, and everybody else involved, it was just an incredible year. And what it did to opponents was truly remarkable. So Kirby Smart would have gotten my vote for Coach of the Year. And the way I look at it as well, too, is, well, yeah, I understand this is a single-season award, but a lot of the arguments is, well, you got all the best players. Well, yeah, but who do you think got them there? Kirby Smart got them there, right? And so, you know, recruiting over the years accumulates into a great season. And so those are my arguments for. My number two vote would be for Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. First 10-win season in regular season history. What that offense was able to do despite some injuries at the quarterback position. The improvements defensively with DJ Durkin, former Maryland head coach, who's kind of a scumbag, I get it. But what that defense is able to do, just a complete 180 almost outside of the Arkansas game earlier this year. Ole Miss was very impressive. So it would be Kirby Smart for me, one. It would be Lane Kiffin, two. And then the conversation is, where do you put Sam Pittman? Where do you put Josh Heupel? Where do you put Shane Beamer? Those are kind of the next guys that are jumbled in there because those coaches did more with less. I think a lot of people would put Sam Pittman first. In fact, a number of people that I talk to and a number of people that I work with would say Sam Pittman would be getting their vote for coach of the year. You know, Arkansas started off, I want to say, 6-0, climbed all the way to number 8 in the AP poll at one point in time. Then you lost 3 straight. And of course, you went through that gauntlet stretch where you played Ole Miss, you played Alabama, and then you played Georgia. And so it was tough, and I understand that. But I would not give Sam Pittman my vote, number one, because it went south in a hurry. And number two, I look at Arkansas as the rebuild started last year. Yeah, sure, they finished 3-7 in the 10-game SEC schedule. I get it. That's not impressive. But they got 2 wins stolen from them. They should have been 5-5. I thought Arkansas was a good team last year. Of course, Tennessee played Arkansas. We saw firsthand what that team looked like and the improvements made from the year before. So I 100% agree. I think Sam Pittman has done more with less. I think he's a good coach. I think Arkansas had a great year and a year that should have been celebrated. But I look at that turnaround as starting last year, and I really look at that team as I know you can't say they won 5 games because they didn't. But I look at that team as being better than a 3-win team because, truthfully, I thought they had a couple games stolen from them. So Sam Pittman might come in next for me, but really he's kind of the side. I would view more as Josh Heupel. The arguments for Josh Heupel and what should be Coach of the Year are very valid. There are things we talk about on this podcast every single day. What Josh Heupel was able to do, taking a 3-7 team from 2020, they got gutted from the transfer portal, that had its head coach fired, its entire coaching staff fired, or, you know, dismissed and all that. You bring in a new regime. You get, again, decimated more by the transfer portal. And what Josh Heupel did, turning that 3-7 team last year into a 7-5 overall team and a 4-4 conference team in the SEC, only the third time in the SEC Tennessee's finished at 500 or better since the firing of Philip Fulmer. There's a lot to celebrate this year about Tennessee's team, no doubt. And I think Josh Heupel deserves a whole lot of credit, especially because he has done so much more with less. Look at Cedric Tillman, the turnaround, the player development. Look at Hendon Hooker in this offensive scheme. This is not the Hendon Hooker that played for Virginia Tech. No, no, sir. Look at what you did at the running back position despite being out with injuries all season long. Look what you did defensively for the majority of the year, except for the last, you know, really after the bye, it's when Tennessee really started struggling defensively. But overall, for bits and pieces of time, that defense was top 25 in rush defense, again, until the last half of the season. But it was a TFL machine that, you know, among the nation leaders and led the nation at points and times with tackles for loss. So I think Josh Heupel and his staff at linebacker, at tight end, at safety, at receiver, got so much more out of so much less when you compare it to other rosters in the SEC. So I think Josh Heupel deserves a lot of credit. I think Josh Heupel deserves a lot of praise. But for me, he would be third in line because, again, what Kirby Smart did was historic and record-setting pace defensively this year. And it's a regular season award. You don't take the SEC championship game into consideration. And he brought all those players to that roster. So you got to reward that sooner or later. If not, Nick Saban would never win Coach of the Year awards. You know what I'm saying? So it would be Kirby for me. It would be Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss 2, and then it would be Josh Heupel in Tennessee 3 for me. A lot of people want to say Mark Stoops. Hey, Kentucky had a fantastic year, and you talk about another coach doing more with less. But coming into the season, we knew Kentucky would be great at the line of scrimmage. We knew Kentucky had a great running back in Chris Rodriguez Jr. We knew Kentucky was getting a skilled player, Wandale Robinson. We knew all these things. So Kentucky, though impressive with Mark Stoops, is way down in the conversation for me. So that's kind of how I view it. I understand I'm in the minority, and you're going to disagree with me, and that's fine. You can hit me up at _Kaner. I'd love to hear your argument. But it's a fun conversation to have, and the fact that we're having this conversation means Josh Heupel has got Tennessee on the right track, right? It means there's positive things to talk about. It means 2021, for all intents and purposes, was a successful season. So, again, a good conversation to have, and I'd be happy to have it with you at _Kaner, at Locked On Vols. The early signing period, good thing or bad thing, we'll discuss when we return. But let's talk about something for a minute, about kicking things up a notch for the big game, the grand stage. It's the Super Bowl. And Super Bowl 56 in L.A. is less than 100 days away. And On Location, the official hospitality partner of the NFL, is the only place to score a once-in-a-lifetime Super Bowl ticket and experience package to the big game. You select your exact seats and choose from elite experiences featuring an exclusive pregame celebration with college stars turned NFL legends like Troy Aikman, Marcus Allen, Tim Brown, and a whole lot more. Plus, you get accommodations at five-star LA hotels, the food by the great Wolfgang Puck, and you visit on location exp.com/SB56 for more information or search Super Bowl on location. Again, that's on location exp.com/SB56 or search Super Bowl on location. I about had a big fumble there when I was saying Wolfgang Puck earlier. I don't know if you caught that. Woo, fun times. One more real quick. It's NetSuite. Again, the proud sponsors of today's show and a proud sponsor of the network. This is it. It's the putt to win the championship. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on the backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software. To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite's the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite, and right now through the end of the year, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program to those ready to upgrade to netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA. Head to netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA for a special end-of-the-year financing on the number one financial system for growing businesses. That is netsuite.com/lockedonNCAA. Segment number two of a Friday show. Guys, thanks so much for ending your work week with us here on Locked On Vols and making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. All right, so a conversation that's spurred in college football here in the last couple of days, and of course, it's because the early signing period is right around the corner on Wednesday. That is what is now National Signing Day. You remember it was a holiday for so long. I was never huge in recruiting growing up. I had friends, shout out Nathan Trower, that would just take off from school, fake sick, whatever, stay home from school, take a personal day, you know, in middle school and high school growing up, and would stay home and watch ESPN all day long and just watch the signings and the kids doing their verbal commits, signing the dotted lines, and seeing who Tennessee would get. I was never that guy. I was never a recruiting guy. I was approached about covering recruiting about a year before I started actually doing it, and I just didn't have any interest in it, really. And then I understood the opportunity it presented myself in this market at my radio station, and of course the platform that, you know, I could eventually elevate to with the guys at VolQuest, which I kind of did a little bit, and I knew that it was something I needed to try to dive into a little bit. And it took a while for me to get used to it. I'm still learning new tricks every single day, but it I'm not gonna lie to you. I mean, it took over a year for me to feel comfortable in covering recruiting and just kind of how to go about it, how to talk to the prospects. You know, just the ins and outs of how to actually do it. I feel like I'm in a good spot now. I've learned a lot, I've grown a lot, and I still got a lot to learn. But, you know, it's a huge conversation, and that's why we've been talking about it so much on here on Locked On Vols. But the conversation at the college level and the big wigs here recently is, should the early signing period change? Well, Bob Bowlesby, commissioner of the Big 12, is saying that, you know, that's being discussed right now. He says, you know, we sure have more early departures than ever before when talking about head coaches. There's a lot more talk than I've heard in recent years about either getting rid of it altogether or perhaps moving it to after the first of the year. We'll see how that goes. Again, Bob Bowlesby is just not really your champion's conference commissioner to begin with. He said, clearly things have changed since the early signing date was put in. The transfer portal didn't exist at the time. There are things that have changed. At the end, we're going to have to go back to the reason we put it in the first place and ask if that is still a valid reason. Well, a lot of the reasons you went ahead and put that in the first place was because for so long you had commits and prospects that would go ahead and early enrollee, go through classes, and, you know, be there for spring practice. But they wouldn't be part of the team. They wouldn't be signed. It'd be weird, right? You want to go ahead and close that chapter for the prospect. You want to go ahead and allow them to stop taking calls from guys like me. Stop taking 3 or 4 calls a night, sometimes more than that, from coaches around the country trying to blow them up, FaceTiming. You want that to be done, right? And everything you want to side with on the side of the student athlete. You want that to be done. You also want to go ahead and get a jump start. You want to go ahead and get all your affairs in order. You want to come in and get into classes, get into that routine to being a college student. Because again, classes is a huge adjustment for newbies, for transfers, for freshmen that come in June. Imagine this, you come in June 1st, you're with the football team, you're going through workouts and stuff, you're taking a summer class or two, and that's fine. You kind of get in a rhythm, you're going through camp, and then boom, when camp's almost over, school starts. And instead of just taking just one class, 1 3-hour class twice a week, you're now taking a 16-hour course load and you're trying to balance everything, and that's a huge adjustment. So for you to come in and go ahead and get that underway as a college student in January through May, I think that's huge. So nonetheless, and he's right, Bob Bosley is, about how the transfer portal didn't exist at the time. Sure, it didn't. But the fact that you're talking about wanting to remove it altogether, because when he says there sure seem to be more early departures than ever before, we're talking about coaches, how teams are panicking, getting rid of their coaches a couple of games before they would get rid of their coaches at the end of the season. To me, that makes no sense. If you're going to fire a coach, why? I mean, you know, what's the use in firing him 5 games before the end of the season when you were going to can him at the end of the year anyway? I mean, again, that argument is so stupid to me from Bob Bowlesby. So who cares if you have an early departure head coach? You're going to fire him at the end of the year anyway. But, you know, teams are panicking making these moves because they want to get an interim in there. They want to go ahead and start their head coaching search so they can be first in line. But also they want an interim to hold the class together, and they want to try to save as much as the early recruiting as possible for the early signing period. Because, again, like I've said, you know, on Wednesday, about 70% of everybody's signing classes will already be set in stone. Sure, there'll be a couple that'll trickle in on Thursday and Friday. There'll be one or two that trickles in February maybe, but the rest will come from the transfer portal. The early signing period is here, and it has just completely discredited anything that February used to be, or February is now, and that's okay. You know, times evolve and everything, but to me, you put it in place to go ahead and get the ball rolling and help the student-athlete. Here's another thing. If you are going to move it to after the first year, that is stupid. You know what happens right before the new year, right before that first week in January? Christmas. And then New Year's. Do you know what prospects are not going to want to be doing? Answering the phone, taking visits. You can't do that, mind you, because, again, that has to be a dead period. You have to respect that. Okay, so Monday and Tuesday will be a dead period where Josh Heupel and his staff will need to come off the road, come back to the complex. They can't talk to prospects before Wednesday signing day, okay? They can't do it in person. So, but the importance of this period right before the early signing period is, you know, this week and last week, these coaches have been everywhere, going in this house talking to mama, going to this school talking to head coach, you know, going to this prospect. You've heard me tell you guys about the path that these assistant coaches for Tennessee have been taking, how they're meeting with, you know, 5, 6, 7 prospects a day almost, you know, in terms of per assistant head coach. It's incredible. But last week and this week's been such a critical time to go and meet and have in-person visits. Okay, because it leads right into the early signing period. You don't want to do this and then have a 2.5-week dead period over the holidays and then have the early signing period right at the new year. Number one, because the prospect still wants to get into school. Number two, the prospect might change his mind. It's just stupid. So getting it after the new year, I guess it's better than nothing, but that's stupid. Getting rid of it altogether, that's stupid. Bob Bowlesby, another just 5-star idea from the idiot that leads the Big 12. So apparently there's discussions about it. I'm telling you, it's not going anywhere, at least not anytime soon, in my opinion. I think I would think I know about it, but you know, watch it next week. They announce that this is the last year of the early signing period. I just think it's stupid. Listen, it helps a student athlete. It helps the university. Why on earth do we want to get rid of it? It's just stupid to me. Plus, it comes right after the football season. You're using these game day visits that lead you right into the early signing period. It makes too much sense. So why on earth would you want to move it? And your biggest reason, Bob Bowlesby, is because we sure have more early departures now than ever before when talking about head coaches. You are stupid, sir. What is the difference if you fire a head coach 3 games before you were going to fire him anyway? Stupid argument. Come back with your more homework, come back with more points, and try again. So that's my thoughts on what is going around right now about the early signing period. I mean, it's just like going to the World Series, the Atlanta Braves, and everybody all of a sudden having an issue with the tomahawk chop. Okay, all of a sudden, I have not heard anybody like Bill Plaschke from the LA Times ever give a rat's ass about the tomahawk chop before the Braves made the World Series. Okay, it's just simple. It's people sitting around trying to look for content, trying to create content, and trying to just be combative. And that's what this conversation is about, the early signing period, because the regular season is over, bowl season hasn't started yet, the college football playoff field is set, so, oh, we need some content. Ah, oh, early signing period, let's get rid of it. I know this is a weird hill to get so passionate about, but here I am. I just think it's just lazy, content-driven opinions, in my opinion. Maybe that's a lazy, content-driven opinion. My opinion. Maybe many of mine are. That's okay. But nonetheless, those are my thoughts on that. I mean, you might have seen the headlines about the early signing period. Could it go away? Or opinion piece. The early signing period, it's bad for college football. You've probably seen that on CBS Sports, ESPN, wherever you get your sports content from. Hopefully, Locked On Vols is your number one source for that. But in case you have seen it and you didn't get a chance to read it, those are the highlights. Those are my thoughts. And that's how I think about it. So anyway, sorry for the cussing. I understand I've cussed the last two episodes. I do apologize. Those of you guys that know me firsthand, away from the microphone, know that I, you know, am squeaky clean. LOL. But that was a joke. But usually I don't cuss on the podcast. Do want to apologize. But a little passion never hurts anybody sometimes. All right, we'll catch up with our buddy Ryan Schumpert of Rocky Top Insider here on the other side. But first, it's the holiday season. So you need to grab a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, or even better than a candy bar, it's a Built Bar. Filled with so much holiday goodness, rich with decadent flavor, covered in chocolate, amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat, high in protein. You get the best of both worlds, delicious and healthy, and so many flavors. You'll have a hard time choosing between just one. Will it be raspberry mint brownie? Will it be cherry or double chocolate? Will it be cookies or cream or peanut butter brownie? Whatever the case may be, Built Bar gives you that extra fuel to fight off those holiday shoppers and stand in those long holiday lines when you look to get those last-minute Christmas gifts, all right? And because it's the season of peace and love, I would not recommend debating over which flavor is your favorite Built Bars at the holiday dinner table, okay? Are you friends with Santa? Well, tell Santa to throw in a few of those Built Bars in those stockings. With so many flavors, they're going to make anyone's Christmas morning a happy one. Want to cozy up with something warm? Here's a holiday secret. Dip your Built Bar into piping hot cocoa and let it melt and give your beverage a little bit of Built Bar flavor. Plus, you'll have a nice, melty Built Bar to go with it. Be sure to have a couple of napkins on hand for sure. So go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, and there you're going to get 15% off your order. It's the holiday season, and Built Bars are the best gifts. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off. Again, it's at Built.com. Ryan Schumpert, friend of the show, and of course, a Rocky Top Insider, now joins us here on a Friday talking a little Tennessee basketball. And Ryan, kind of an embarrassing showing at the Jimmy V Classic, to say the least. And I'll say this, not just for Tennessee, but also for Texas Tech, also for Villanova, also for Syracuse, maybe the Rims, I don't know, but an abysmal shooting performance results in an overtime loss, 57-52 to Texas Tech.
Yeah, it was certainly not a good shooting night at Madison Square Garden for any of the four teams that were in the event. And I'm sure made quite a night of basketball for the fans that went to both games. I don't think there were too many fans there at the start of the Tennessee game. I think it'll probably a lot more for that second game. But yeah, you're right. In a game that just kind of brings back memories of the Georgetown-Tennessee game when Konzo Martin was there. I think that one was like 38-37, so a little bit worse. But there was just about that 10-minute stretch from I think about the 13-minute mark to the 3-minute mark in the second half, where I think both teams scored 5 points and Tennessee made one shot in that stretch, and it was really ugly. And I think there certainly are good things to say about Tennessee's defense that continues to play better than I thought they would, but it's just overshadowed. I think even if they won, it would have, you know, Santiago Vescovi hits that three there at the end. I think it even still would have been overshadowed by what was just a pretty brutal offensive night for the Vols.
Yeah, not only that stretch of run that you referenced with five combined points, but in Tennessee from the like the 11:55 mark at the second half down to the 1:52 or somewhere in there, no made field goals. You had a couple of free throws, which Again, that's something I want to hit on here in a moment again, but you can't go through stretches like that and expect to win any type of ball game. So it was just horrific. I do want to ask you, you know, I understand, you know, we always get the December, you know, basketball loss freak out. You already got one in November with Villanova. Like, there's no sense in freaking out, but I will say there is cause for concern with how you got to that loss. You got blown out of the gym, didn't even show up against Villanova. Offensively, 6 of 40 from 3, 8 of 16 from the charity stripe. What was it, 17 of 91 or something from the field, to just overall. I mean, there's cause for concern in how you lost it, but there's no reason to freak out for a loss in December. Do you see it any differently?
No, that's exactly how I see it. I mean, Tennessee losing to Texas Tech, just as losing to Villanova on a non-conference or on a neutral site floor, isn't going to hurt Tennessee in March. It's not going to hurt Tennessee with the eyes of the committee, but you're right. Worrisome things in both those games. And obviously Villanova was just a complete dud, but I mean, you went back and watched, I think what made the Villanova game so bad was the defensive effort, how the team played when things didn't go well for them offensively. So I think on the positive end, you could say they have that fixed. They did the same against Colorado. They struggled in that game early offensively, but the questions for the offense, I think are pretty clear at this point. It's a team that wants to shoot a lot of threes, but I don't think it's a good enough 3-point shooting team to carry them. Now, that doesn't mean they can't have good nights. That doesn't mean that what they did against Texas Tech can't be the minority, but it's not a good, you know, an Alabama and Auburn team from a few years ago that made the Final Four with Jared Harper and Bryce Brown. They don't have that level of shooting. And when you look at their interior scoring through whatever it's been, 8 games, the extent of it's basically Kennedy Chandler with a little bit of John Fulkerson, but the rest of Tennessee's big men have had no consistency on the offensive end. Even Fulkerson, who I think has played well since he's come back, he's not returned to that all SEC John Fulkerson that you saw at the end of the 2019-2020 season. So it's kind of a lot of pressure, I think, on Kennedy Chandler to score at the basket if Tennessee's not making shots. And when you look at the personnel Texas Tech had, their ability to switch everything, a lot of long wings playing at all spots, that made it a bad matchup for Tennessee. But I think it did expose a pretty big issue with Tennessee's offense.
Yeah, John Fulkerson, a double-double, 10 points, 10 rebounds, also 5 blocks. I mean, a pretty good game for Fulky against Texas Tech, who I still just can't believe. He's been here 10 years. You got to get weight room, man. You got to stop playing so soft at times. You know, we're talking about the negatives, obviously, offensively, the positives defensively. A really good showing. Tennessee has surged up the KenPom rankings in terms of team defense, in terms of efficiency and all that. The same with Texas Tech. I mean, it was a good defensive battle, but Tennessee's now turned into statistically one of the best defensive teams in the country.
They have. And KenPom, I think, had them right around 19-20 to start the season. And my thought was, there's no way they'll be that good. You know, I thought they'd be a top 40 defense. Certainly wouldn't be bad. But with just all the players they lost. I mean, East Pons is one of the best defensive players in the history of Tennessee basketball. And obviously, Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer are really good on both wings. I just thought it was going to be natural for them to take a step back. But you mentioned it with John Fulkerson having 5 blocks. Olivier Camois has been good on defense. Their rim protection has been solid, averaging more steals than they have in any year under a Rick Barnes Tennessee coach team. So they've been really, really strong, solid there, up to number 1 on KenPom. They jumped from, I think, 4-1 after the Texas Tech game, and their offense fell from about 40-80 after the Texas Tech game. So pretty big fluctuation from there. It's obviously still early in the season, but it does look like a Tennessee defense is going to be able to win them games on some nights when the shot isn't falling. And from what we've seen from this Tennessee offense, that's a big plus, because there's going to be some nights where the shot's not going to be falling.
Yeah, and you've got to find ways to score when shots aren't falling. I mean, I don't think Tennessee will ever go 6-40 again from 3. Should never. And I understand, too, Rick Barnes is going to say, hey, if the shot's open, take it, right? You preach open shots, preach open shots. But if the shots aren't falling, you got to penetrate to the blocks, try to pick up fouls and go to the line. But even when you do that, and Tennessee doesn't do that enough, but even when you do that, you got to make your freebies, and Tennessee's just struggling there. So certainly a sample size is early in the season, but in terms of the ratings and all that, you'll get a better picture as the season goes on. Yeah, UNC Greensboro coming to town, USC Upstate's a chance to figure it out for the Volunteers before that matchup against Memphis, Bridgestone Arena, and of course the Crimson Tide at the end of the month before the new year. So, you know, you got a couple of games to try to work out the kinks, but it's about to be go time, as we talk with Ryan Shumpert of RTI. Ryan, should the defense focus more? I'm not saying make it the identity, but I mean, should you try to get more consistency in terms of scoring and in terms of, you know, just putting up shots with Kumwa and Fulkerson, because those guys don't shoot enough, in my opinion.
I think you're right, especially with Fulkerson. I think it's a very much a balance of, when you give him the ball down low, don't make it a waste of possession. I mean, you mentioned John Fulkerson needing to play stronger at times. He has moments when he gets the ball down there and you can't back him down and he tries to force something, and then you're just wasting possessions. And I think what it has hurt Tennessee is when Kennedy Chandler, who is able, I know more than anybody on Tennessee's team to get big men open shots under the rim. You see too many situations where Tennessee's players aren't just ready to grab it and dunk it. I mean, there was a really killer instance in the first half of that Texas Tech game where Kennedy Chandler made a really nice move, shoots a quick pass to Cam Waugh. He's on a baseline. He's got to dunk it. It's an easy dunk, and he's sneaking too much, misses a layup. It ends up being a Texas Tech run out and basket. And I think when we talk about the big men and getting more offensive production, I think you, in the back of your mind, Brandon Huntley Hatfield, at least for me, it's just there because he's probably he has the highest ceiling of any Tennessee player offensively, and he doesn't have the consistency, but even in flashes, we've seen it this year where he's been really good. He hasn't played as much these last two games. You know, he's a guy when we watched him practice, the consistency with the practice habits aren't necessarily there. And, you know, if you follow, it doesn't take long to follow Rick Barnes' coach team to know you got to do it in practice before you're going to play. So I think that's certainly an issue why you haven't seen him out there more. But he's a guy that has the talent to be a legitimate go-to scorer inside and has, just like kind of the whole team, he's been better on defense than I've thought. So I think he's a guy that I'm still holding out on that can play a lot better in February and March and be a legitimate, if not a starter, a guy that plays a fringe 20 minutes a game.
Hey, Ron, last thing, man. We know that a couple of things about Rick Barnes. You're not going to play if you can't play defense. If he doesn't trust you, you're going to get the quick hook. Justin Powell, only 8 minutes in a game that was dominated by backcourt players. And I understand Tennessee went with a 3-point guard lineup the majority of the second half with Ziegler out there, who I think is going to be a stud. I love watching him play. But Justin Powell, only 8 minutes. Kumwa, only, you know, played, I think, 3 or 4 minutes in the second half. Is it fair to say that Barnes might still not trust Olivia Kumwa completely? Because you saw it all last year, how he didn't get minutes, or you go in, make one mistake, you wouldn't see him again. Or was it just matchup dependent? And then what's the deal with Powell? Is the trust level there with Barnes yet? And I understand everything grows in time. We're just 7 games in or 8 games into this season. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the Kumwa one surprised me the most because from everything we've seen so far to the preseason, the first couple of games, it seems like Kumwa had earned Barnes' trust. And he played poorly in that first half, and that was the first time this year that we've seen them, you know, really go away from him when he struggled, kind of like we consistently saw last year. I think one thing that makes it it's too early for me to say that the trust level is not complete, but I think what makes it interesting is Josiah James being back just gives him so much more flexibility. They can play him at the four. That's not – and against very few teams, is that going to be a matchup problem, playing Josiah James at the four? And I think we're going to continue to see – more of that as the year goes along, especially if Huntley Hatfield, Plastich, Kumwa can't consistently earn Barnes' trust. And then on Powell, surprising, and I think it's been a consistent theme throughout the year of can he play defense well enough to consistently earn Barnes' trust. And in that game, you look at it, Tennessee was struggling to create stuff going to the basket. That's not necessarily Justin Powell's strength, and he was struggling to shoot it from three-point range. And maybe you – say, hey, he's your best shooter. At least he's been their best shooter in practice. You keep on riding with him when he struggles, but they decided to go with Ziegler, who they don't feel like is much of a drop-off on the defensive end, and really gave them a spurt at the end of the first half. I think that's kind of what made a big effect on the backcourt lineup in the second half. As Ziegler scored, I think, 6 of the last 8 points to kind of get Tennessee in striking distance at halftime, and then they kind of got the benefit of the doubt after that in the second half. But Powell is one I'm really interested on. I don't have the numbers right in here in front of me exactly, but in the 4 games they've played against lesser opponents, all at Thompson Bowling Arena, he's shooting something like 8 of 12 from 3. And then in the 4 games against good opponents, Power 5 opponents they've played in non-conference, he's like 1 of 13. So a huge discrepancy there. Too small of a sample size to say that that's a huge issue. You don't even know if it's a playing at home, playing on the road thing, playing good teams, playing bad things. But that's certainly something that I'm watching as we get into the final stretch before SEC play.
Yeah, it's a really good note. And if you want more notes from Ryan, you can visit him at RockyTopInsider.com. Ron, what all do you guys have going on over there? And, of course, throw out your Twitter handle so everybody can follow you and follow your great basketball coverage.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RSCHUMP00. That's RSCHUMP00. And then a little bit of everything on the site this week. Not as much Lady Vols as they had the week off from Sunday to Sunday, but a little bit of their stuff. You want to go back recapping another big comeback win in Virginia Tech, and I do something every week, starting 5 for the men's team, just kind of looking at 5 bullet points. That was before the Texas Tech game, but it included tons of stuff from Colorado, and we had complete coverage of Texas Tech game and plenty of stuff on the bowl game matchup with Purdue as well.
Big thanks to Ryan Shumper for joining the show. Really enjoy his analysis on Tennessee basketball. He's one of the rising stars in Knoxville media, so be sure to stay tuned with Ryan's work, and appreciate him for taking the time chatting a little hoops here on Locked On Vols. Guys, that'll do it. Thank you so much again for making Locked On Vols your first listen. You know the drill now. Locked On Bets, your boy Q, handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Make that your second listen. That is Locked On Bets. Guys, it means more to me than you'll ever know. I say it all the time, but I truly, truly do mean it. Thank you for taking the time, your investment, to hang out with us here on Locked On Vols. Another week in the books. We will recap some Tennessee hoops action and everything else from over the weekend on a Monday Locked On Vols. Enjoy the weekend.